But the value of pursuing that which you may not know that you cannot complete is extraordinary. And the best example I can think of is the Mishnah that maybe you aren't thinking of, but for sure everybody knows, right? Okay? And there are a number of them. Hazman katzar, v'amlacha merubah, time is short, the work is great, right? You know, enata, what is it? Lo alecha amlacha ligmor, right? It's not for you, thank you, to finish the labor, right? But neither are you free to desist from it. And many, many other Mishnayot. Now, the words here are so beautiful. Hashem. And the word here is Adon. We're going to get to that in a second. Sfatai tiftach. Open my lips. Do you ever have that experience? You know, I get that experience all the time as a teacher. And I will get nervous if I ever stop feeling that. You know, student comes and wants to talk to you. And maybe you're actually in the illusion that you're the teacher and they're the student. Those of you who know that that's ridiculous, right? We're all students, we're all teachers, and we have this relationship going. Okay? And you don't know before this conversation what you're going to learn, and you don't know what they're going to teach you. And that's not just a line, that's true, right? That you probably end up teaching more because you know that that's true. That's all out of the discussion. So you're going to have this discussion, and you realize in the course of the discussion, somebody's asking you an unbelievably important question. They don't want to just know if the ice cream is kosher. They're struggling with the rest of their life. They're struggling with who to marry, you know? Person lost their brother, and their mother is suicidal, and what do they do? All sorts of questions, right? I'm up on the roof, and it's 3 days before Tisha B'Av, and I'm standing with a student, and he is bawling his eyes out. Says he has to talk to me, I still don't know what's going on, and he finally tells me, you know, I just spent 3 weeks with you guys, and this program is all about love and family and everything, and I'm gay. What do you do? What do you do? And then he tells you, not only am I gay, but I've been diagnosed as HIV positive. What do you do? Right? So what do you do? So I want you to know you do two things. Well, first of all, you hug him. What else could you do? You actually thank Hashem that it's a guy, because, right? You hug him. And then he tells you the most amazing thing that will stay with me forever. This must be almost 10 years ago. He tells you, you know, I've spoken to 3 different rabbis, but none of them ever hugged me. How sad is that? The second thing that's going through your mind is, okay, just please give me the right words. There's no way you can prepare for a conversation like that. So you ask the Kosh Baruch Hu, just give me the right words. And this happens every day. You know, your children, your spouse, your best friends, your boss, someone at work is doing something wrong. You're on the subway and someone says, don't you think they should give back the whole land of Israel? Why don't you guys go live in Uganda? Or any other discussion. Do you just spout it forth? Or do you take a moment to say, just Hashem, give me the right words. Hashem sfatai tiftach, open my lips. I'm trying to get somewhere, I don't even know where I want to go. And sometimes people don't enter this experience because it's just too overwhelming. I don't know where I want to go. So you take a moment, you say, you know what? Even if I don't know where I want to go, even if I don't know how to get there, this is the recipe for come and I'll help you. That's how it starts. The word Adon, Adonai, is a specific name of God. And it refers not to Hashem, not to that overwhelmingness, okay, although it relates to it, okay, because that's the Yud, the Hey, the Vav, and the Hey, Hayahu Ve'Yeh. This refers to Adnut, ownership. The Adon really is the master. And he owns all the servants, right? He owns all the slaves. An Adon can be an Adon of property. For example, there is the owner of the land, the owner of an object. We call God the Adon Olam, the owner of everything. Now, owner doesn't just mean you have things. It means you have responsibilities. It means that you're responsible for it. It means that it's yours, right? That's the part of God that I'm trying to access, because Hashem is the Adon of me. If you have an Adon, you know, it's interesting that when slaves, okay, finish their period of time as indentured servants, okay, Judaism is a very different idea of slavery. A Hebrew slave is not really a slave. He's an indentured servant. Basically, a person steals and has no money to pay back, right? And he's caught. And usually a person at that point hits the low, the nadir of their lifetime in terms of self-worth. Because I'm nothing. I've stolen. I have no money. I'm going to get thrown in jail. Judaism says you don't throw such a person in jail. They have an obligation to pay back. Now you think that the obligation to pay back is because the person who's supposed to, from whom the money was stolen, is supposed to get his money back. That's only half the equation. Because if that was the equation, God could give that person the money back another way. The other half of the equation is this person needs to be paying that back. Because if he's going to rediscover his self-worth, he needs to be able to pay back. He needs to be able to fix what he's done. But he has no money. So comes along Jesus and says, you think you're worthless? You think you have no money? I will show you that you have value. We're going to value your time. We're going to value your work. And we're going to sell you as an indentured servant, and you're going to work off your debt. And in the process of working off your debt, you discover you have value. The Adon, the master who takes on such an indentured servant, has enormous responsibilities. The Talmud says, Kana Eved Kana Rav, if a person acquires such an indentured servant, they've really acquired a master. If you have one pillow in the house, you have to give it to the indentured servant. If there's only enough food for one person, he gets to eat it. If there's one bed, he gets to sleep on it. This is not slavery of the deep south. So the Adon is responsible. I talk to the Adon who created me, and I say, I know you created everything, and I know you know everything, and I know that you take responsibility for me, and you know what I'm supposed to be doing. Just help me find the words. That's a very powerful prayer. And Judaism wants you to take a moment to pause. Okay? Ufi agiti latecha. And if you can help me find the words, my mouth will say, not sing, say your praises. Be able to define what you give me in this world. Now look at the first blessing. So let me give you an overview of these three blessings. Okay? And then we'll see at the end if there are any questions that haven't been resolved. Right? Trust me. Okay? Give you an overview. Very interesting. In order to understand these three blessings, we need to understand the concept of avot, of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Now, most of us think that the concept of avot, the concept of forefathers, is simply an ancestral line. That we are descended from Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And that's true. And you could get into a whole discussion of whether genetics play a role, and if a person is a direct descendant of a great rabbi, does that make him of different stock or better stock? And that's a whole discussion which I don't want to get into. And there are different opinions, and that's a good thing to struggle with, and I don't know. But beyond the physical descendancy, there's also a spiritual descendancy. You have acquired these as your avot because of who you are. And I'll give you an example. What if a person converts to Judaism? Do they say this prayer? Elokeinu, our God. Elokei Avotainu, the God of our forefathers. So somebody asked Rav Kook this question. And he has a whole series of responsum called the Mishpat Kohen, which are some of the most beautiful halachic responsum that you'll ever find. Because they're written by Rav Kook. They go way beyond halachic questions. And he gets asked this question. And his response, okay, is magnificent. Obviously the convert says this prayer because when a person accepts upon themselves Judaism and decides to become a Jew, right, these are their forefathers. It's not that I'm a Jew, he's a convert. By the way, there's a halachic prohibition that comes all the way back from the Torah. It's forbidden to remind the convert that they are a convert. You're not allowed to say, you know, hey, Joe's here and we're very proud of him because he converted last year. You're not allowed to do that. Not only that, but if you have an afternoon to love someone, okay, and you don't know who to love, if you can find someone who's a convert, by loving, remember we mentioned that loving is giving, so giving and doing and helping, that's an act of love, we're not going to take this to its extreme, right? There's a special mitzvah of the Ahavta et Ager. Okay, Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon suggests that this is the greatest mitzvah in the entire Torah. So this is a big one. You know, in fact, because of this, there's actually a great mitzvah to marry a person who's converted, and people who are converted actually have tremendous merit for all sorts of things. To give chesed, and they have tremendous merits for refuah, for healing, and for being healed, and that's a whole other discussion. Tremendous mitzvah. Okay? And that's, by the way, why Boaz marries Ruth, who was a giyoret, who was a convert, and that's why the messianic line, David, is descended from Ruth. All of the future of Judaism is dependent on the convert. Okay? So the convert says this. Why? Because Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are not just about our ancestral lineage. They represent something deeper. Now this itself could be a month course at Israelite, but I'm going to try to give you an idea in 3 minutes. Okay, but I want you to know this is a deep idea. If you get nothing else out of this whole week, this idea would be worthwhile, because this really changes a lot of perspectives. What is Avram? What is Yitzchak? What is Yaakov? Some of us have discussed this before, but you can't study this without having this idea. Avram is the beginning. Okay? Every experience in human life has 3 parts. This is not my idea, by the way. This is Rav Dessler who talks about this, that comes from Kabbalah. And by the way, if you want to read a great summary of this idea. There's a magnificent book by Akiva Tatz, which is really a summary of Rav Dessler's, some of Rav Dessler's writing on particular topics, which I'm sure is in our library here. It's called, I think, Living Inspired. And at the beginning of this book is a synopsis of this idea, which is beautiful. Anyway, there are three parts to every experience in human life. Every experience. Let's call them for the moment the beginning, the middle, and the end. Sounds pretty obvious. What's the beginning? Beginnings are all about inspiration. They're all about excitement. Tremendous energy. You know, you're doing your doctorate and you have to write a thesis. And you're stuck. You can't think of what to write your thesis on. And you're walking down the street one day and you see something that triggers something and all of a sudden it comes to you. You know with absolute certainty what you want to write your thesis on. You can't wait. You can't get a cab, so you run home. You know, across town. And you open up your laptop and you start typing furiously and you're up until 4 a.m. and the ideas just flow and it's incredible. And at 4 a.m. you can't even go to sleep because you're so invigorated and inspired by this idea. You've just written an outline for your thesis, you're so excited. Well, you can't take this outline and give it in to this board because they're going to look at you like you're silly. Now you have to take it and you have to convert it into a thesis. That's a tremendous amount of work. That could take you 1.5 years. You could hit all sorts of walls and roadblocks in the middle of that 1.5 years, and you could get depressed, and you could get challenged, and what am I doing this for, and why do I need a PhD anyway, and I need to get married, and whatever else goes through your life. That's a lot of work. The beginning is all that energy. The process of taking that beginning and making it real, that's not out there. That's inside. That's hard work. You know? Writing a book, same thing. Finding a person in your life. There's that beginning. You meet a girl and it's unbelievable. You know, I absolutely remember with complete clarity the beginning of my relationship with Dorit. I met Dorit, got a note on my door from my brother. We were sharing an apartment that my parents had, and which is an interesting term. And they left, and he left me a note. He said, listen, there's a party for David Lavender. It's an engagement party. And it's out in Tel Aviv. And Ruth left a message that this girl, Dorit, is coming back to Israel for a semester. And so they're making a party to welcome her. Now, I had met Dorit once before, about 4 years earlier. And I remembered she was very cute. And I thought she was so cute that I asked about her and found out she was going back to America. And I said, not going there, been there, done that. Don't want a 6,000-mile relationship. But I remembered her enough that I thought it was worth going to check out this party. So here's the balance, right? Engagement party for a couple that's getting married all the way out in Tel Aviv. Meet a pretty girl right down the block. Not too difficult, right? So I went to this party, and I sit on the sofa, and I start talking to this girl, Dorit, and we're sitting there, and it's about 3 hours. And all of her closest friends in Israel came, and she totally ignored them, and we had this whole great discussion for 3 hours. And the next thing I know, it's like 12 o'clock at night, and we're sitting with all those people, right? And they bring out this birthday cake, and they start singing happy birthday. And I said, oh, whose birthday is it? She goes, oh, mine, whatever. It was a birthday party for her, and I had no idea there was a birthday party for her. And it suddenly hit me, this girl's at a birthday party for herself with all of her best friends, and she just spent 3 hours talking to me. Worth pursuing, right? Yeah. And this was on a Thursday night, and Tuesday night we're sitting at Kibbutz Kfar Etzion, right? And I couldn't get this girl off my mind, and I kept talking to her, and she looks at me and says, I just want you to know that I know we're going to get married. Right? He says. And then she says, and then she says, and I want you to know that you know we're going to get married. She says, when you know that you know, let me know. And that was it. That was it. That was it. You know, and I had to wait a little longer. You know, I wanted to meet her family. I was a slow, you know, learner. It took me about 6 weeks, but she was there. She was just, you know. In fact, I think about how much trouble we could have saved if I would have listened to her then. It took me a few years to learn. I just always listened to her. But anyway, we're going to erase certain parts of this tape. But in any event, right? Just amazing. Amazing. Inspiring, exciting fireworks, right? But people who are married know that that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. That's not really what a relationship is based on. That's just whatever the reason Hashem decides to give you a gift. Some people get that gift, some people don't. Doesn't mean you can't build a healthy marriage. Then you get married. You got to put in a lot of work. I mean, marriage is not the let's go out for pizza, and marriage is not the fireworks in heaven. Marriage is, did you pick up the garbage? Marriage is, you know, you said what? And all sorts of other things. Marriage is making sure, all sorts of things. You know? And it's years of work. And we're married 16 years, and believe me, I'm still working on it. You know? And I can't imagine, I can't imagine that I thought 16 years ago that I had any idea who my wife was. I didn't know at all. And I look back at how much work it was to get to where I am now and how much more I have to go. You know, and I meet people like you who are married 3 months, and I'm like, you got some fun ahead of you, right? You know, I mean, Baruch Hashem, it's a great project to have. Tremendous work. That's the long, drawn out, middle of the night, waking up with the kids and being there to cover things and making sure that all sorts of things. You know? Nobody tells you about cleaning toilets. I didn't know about cleaning toilets. To me, you know, if there's nothing on the floor, it's good enough. The ring around the bathtub, that's artistic, right? What do I know? Somebody gave me a very good piece of advice. Unfortunately, it's too late for you two, but for some of you, it might still be time. Whatever you will do on the first Friday, Erev Shabbat, that you are married, you will do forever. I made the mistake. It's true. I made the mistake of taking out the garbage. And I've been doing it ever since. Thank God I didn't vacuum the carpets. It was such a good move. It's true. So you have the beginning, and you have this long, drawn-out process. And then, at the end of that long, drawn-out process, it all comes together. And that initial inspiration, and that long journey, comes together. And the synthesis of those two, now stick with me here, the synthesis of those two create the finished product. And usually, at the end of this process, before it actually gets great, it gets worse. You know? If you're writing a book, and I'm sure Rabbi Aaron could attest to this. So there's the inspiration, you're giving classes, and it's so exciting, and it's unbelievable, you got these ideas. And then there's, we could turn this into a book, and then there's long, endless hours of editing, and listening, and going to the publisher, and he doesn't like this idea, and he doesn't like that idea, and this ridiculous title, and Kabbalah, who, and where is that, and whatever. And then at the end, you're all excited, and you take it in. I met a guy on Shabbat, who was producing this whole play, and he was going to go to Broadway, it was tremendous, like 4 years ago, and he was so excited, and he spent a year writing it, and he went to the producers, and they were all excited, they read it, they said, you know, we have to change this whole thing around. And he's been working on it to redo it for 3 years. Just when you think you're there, you have to get all over again. And this happens in everything in life. You're ready to give in your thesis, and someone looks at it and says, this is trash. And you don't know what to do. And so you put in that last burst of energy, and you fix, and you do, and you work. You're married for 4 or 5 years, and you have some crisis. Everybody has crises in their marriages, and that's healthy. And it's frightening, and it's challenging, and it's magnificent. And then you put it all together, and you get over that, and you get through it, and you work it out, and you end up with something more magnificent than you could ever have dreamed of. By the way, the creation of life is the example for this par excellence. The beginning of the creation of a human being is a burst of energy. It's a moment. Right? A man comes to a woman, they come together. It's a second. And it's not a second like in the movies. It's just this burst of energy. And that's the beginning. Well, then comes a long period. Gestation, pregnancy, morning sickness, whatever you would like, honey. Right? Long periods of time. Right? And then comes the end of that whole process. And just before it's about to get better, it looks like it's about to end. I mean, if you didn't know what a birth was, and you came across this person whom you love so much, and she's never screaming because she isn't wise enough to have discovered epidural, and she's having cramps, and Nebuch blood everywhere, and who knows what, and people with mass, it's frightening. And then in a moment, it all turns around. And that fright and that struggle turns into something magnificent, and a child is born. And that child is essentially the synthesis of that initial burst of energy, the man contributing the seed, and the long period of gestation. And it's interesting that from this paradigm comes the idea that the man is the enterer, the giver, the extender, and the woman is the receiver. And that doesn't mean that sometimes women don't have a part of man in them, and men don't have a part of women, but there is these energies Kabbalistically, and that the synthesis of the two is the creation of life. And this essentially is Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Avraham represents the beginning. Enormous burst of energy onto the world. Chesed, loving kindness, outgoing energy. Gonna change the world. Avraham comes onto the world like a breath of fresh air. Monotheism, one God. God can actually love you.
It's a nefesh asher asa b'charan. And he does all these magnificent things. And Avram was always out there. He's always doing his fighting wars. He's going down to Egypt. He's coming from Egypt. He's sacrificing his son. He's talking to God. He's arguing with them. It's all this energy. But at the end of the day, when Avram finishes his journey, and his goal is to produce the Jewish people, he's left with one son who gets it. Yitzchak. And when you look at the beginning of Yitzchak, once Avram dies, you've started with one Jew, but you've still got one Jew. Now Yitzchak is almost the opposite of Avram. Where Avram is outgoing, Yitzchak is ingoing. If Avram represents chesed, loving kindness, outwardness, Yitzchak represents gvura, internal strength. Avram is out there digging wells. Yitzchak never digs his own wells. He re-digs the wells of his father Avram. Avram goes down to Egypt. Yitzchak is told by God, your place is to stay in Israel. Avram fights wars. Yitzchak never fights wars. Yitzchak never even goes out and finds his own wife. She's brought to him. The entire life of Yitzchak is gvura, is internal energy. Receiving. Taking the spark of Avram and converting it, transitioning it into something real and lasting. And then comes Yaakov. Yaakov represents Tiferet. Tiferet is a form of beauty. It is the beauty of synthesis, the beauty of togetherness. Yaakov takes the spark of Avram, the long, hard work of Yitzchak, and he puts them together to create a Yaakov. And it is Yaakov, ultimately, who has not one, but 12 sons. And from Yaakov is the beginning of the Jewish people. And when you go through life, you very often have an Avram. You have this amazing experience. You're sure you're there. It's unbelievable. Whether it's that you meet the right person, or you have an idea for a book, or anything. And sometimes people have an Avram, and they're sure they're already at Yaakov. They're so excited. You have to ask yourself, did you have a Yitzchak? Now, you can't quantify Yitzchak. Yitzchak doesn't have to be X amount of time. You ever read a book that had a Yaakov and had an Avram and had no Yitzchak? Right? Remember there was a book that came out right after the operation of Entebbe. Okay? 90 minutes in Entebbe. Right? The Israeli army went down to Uganda, saved the hostages, brought them home. 3 days later, there was this book out. The guy had an idea, great idea, spent 2 days and wrote a book. He had an Avram, and he produced a Yaakov. He had no Yitzchak. And that's why he didn't sell, because you read this book and it was garbage. Sometimes, unfortunately, you read books of Torah like that. You know, do you have a Yitzchak? Sometimes relationships are like that. I meet someone and it's an Avram. It's unbelievable. I'm flying in the heavens. But I don't put in my Yitzchak work. Now, don't get me wrong. Some people can put in the Yitzchak in a weekend. I mean, I have a friend. He was 30 years old. He knew exactly what he was looking for. He met his wife. Okay, Taya and Menachem. He met his wife at an NCSY Shabbaton. Okay, they were both counselors. By Saturday night, they knew they were going to get married. And they got engaged. They called up their parents. He said, I met this girl. She's amazing. We're engaged. And they said, we want to get married this week. And his father said, you're absolutely out of your mind. And he said, I'm not out of my mind. I've dated lots of girls. I'm 30 years old. I'm ready to get married. Grew up religious. Knew what he was looking for. Parents convinced him to wait 6 weeks. And everybody was talking, right? You know? 6 weeks. He doesn't know her. They have 6 children. They live in Alunshvut. They're married now 22 years. They got married in 1980, right? So what is that? 25 years. Wow. And Baruch Hashem, they have a great marriage. Sometimes you know, his Yitzchak was that weekend. Most people can't do that. Most people need a little more time. And you know in your heart when you put in the Yitzchak. Sometimes Yitzchak just lives on and on and on. You got to know when to get to Yaakov. Now, why do I tell you all this? Because that's the recipe of Shemoneh Esrei. The first blessing is two things. It's the paradigm of all three, but it's really the blessing of Avraham. And that's why the end of this blessing is Magen Avraham, shield of Avraham. Now, the halacha tells us an interesting thing. The Talmud in Brachot says, you remember this, I mentioned this to you last week, that when you say this Shemoneh Esrei prayer, you have to say it with Kavanah. Kavanah we usually translate as intent. But really Kavanah comes from the word Kivun, which means direction. You have to know where you're going. You have to understand where you're trying to get to. Tefillah is like everything else in life. If you don't set goals, if you don't know what you're trying to accomplish, of course you're not going to accomplish it. Right? You go to an MBA because you think you're going to learn how to play basketball. So there may be lots of value in what you learn in an MBA, but you're not going to get what you need because you think you're learning how to play basketball. So the beginning of the Tefillah is all about setting the goals. Here's the goals, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I want you to take what they gave us, bring it into this world.
The first blessing is the blessing of Avraham, Magen Avraham. Halacha says, if you don't have kavana, you don't fulfill the prayer at all. But, says the Talmud, if you had kavana, if you had this intent, this direction, this understanding, this focus, for the beginning, for the first three blessings, what's called for the avot, that's what the Talmud calls them. The Birchot Avot, the blessings of the forefathers, these three blessings, the Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov blessings, then you're okay. Then you don't have to repeat the Shemoneh Esrei. And the Shulchan Aruch, the code of Jewish law, in some opinions suggest that even if you only have Kavanah for the first blessing, you're okay. And whether we can achieve that is interesting. Why? Because the first one is the overview. If you could just get the overview, you'd be okay. And if you look at the words of the first blessing, they're all about Avram. Gomel chasadim tovim. Right? That God does loving kindness. Okay? Koneh kol, liknot, kinyan, is to acquire a transaction. It's the beginning of the process. To make the transaction. It's not what I do with the sale. Umevi goel, and to bring redemption. Look at the second blessing. The second blessing, Atagi bo le'olam Hashem, this is all about Yitzchak. Now by the way, Avram, you remember we mentioned the different names of God. And we said that Hashem is the name of God that I'm in awe of. And Elohim is the name of God of developing relationship with God. So Avram, it's very interesting. Avram represents the ability to develop a relationship with God. Okay? The intimacy that I have with God. Chesed, loving kindness. Yitzchak represents the awe of God. Gvura. And if you look at the experience, by the way, who is Yitzchak? Avram is the oked. He is the one who binds his son. Yitzchak is the ne'ekad, the one who is bound. On a mystical level, the Zohar teaches us and the Medrash describes this, even though Avram didn't sacrifice his son, he did. On a mystical level, Avram actually sacrificed up his son. Afro shel Yitzchak munach lefanai. The ash of Yitzchak on the altar is always before me, says God. Yitzchak is the sacrificed. He is the one willing to receive. And that's why if you look at all of these things, mechaye meitin, the resuscitation of the dead, right? Somech noflim, that God upholds the fallen. Rofei cholim. If the beginning is what I do for God, the second stage is what God gives to me. Right? Matir asurim. God frees the prisoners. Mekayim unatoli shenei afar. Mi chamocha baal gvurot. Master, owner of gvura, of this process. V'neman atal achayot mitim. And what's fascinating about this, the concept of being resuscitated, of arising and awakening, is something that I experience every day. Do you ever wonder about that? I'll tell you a frightening thing. We're almost done now. There's a Talmud in Sanhedrin, 10th chapter of Sanhedrin. It talks about the principles that a person has to accept in order to really get it. Okay? In order to understand Judaism. One of those principles is Tchiyat HaMetim, resuscitation of the dead. Rabbi Akiva says, if you don't understand resuscitation of the dead, you'll never get into Olam Haba. You'll never get into the world to come. That's pretty frightening. How many people in this room know what the heck that's talking about? How many people here, including me, can say we absolutely believe in the resuscitation of the dead? What does that mean? It sounds Christian. So first of all, getting into Olam Haba is not really in the world to come. It's really more, Maimonides suggests that it's a process. Right? It's not a reward or a punishment. It's like if I want my son to understand calculus one day, why I would do that to him, I'm not sure. But if I want my son to understand calculus, he's not going to understand calculus unless he does series and stages in math. But that doesn't mean that he's punished by not getting calculus if he doesn't do trigonometry and algebra. It just means if he doesn't do physics, he's not going to get it. Olam Haba is something that I just get because I've gotten somewhere. So one of the stages of getting there is Tchiyat HaMetim. Why is that so important? And second of all, how does Tchiyat HaMetim relate to me? Why do I need to know right now about resuscitation of the dead? Because Tchiyat HaMetim, resuscitation of the dead, that's something that happens to me every single day. Every day, I'm giving my life over. Now, most of our lives are Yitzchak. If you think most of your life is going to be Yaakov, you know what Yaakov is? Yaakov is yesterday at Havdalah. That's Yaakov. Yaakov is yesterday at Havdalah. It's one of those moments where all the hard work of a week of learning and that beginning, because I want you to know, if you had all the hard work of a week of learning, but you didn't have that beginning, if you didn't come here with that excitement, with that enthusiasm, with that burst of energy, with that desire to even come to Israel, you wouldn't have gotten here. So it's really a synthesis. It leads you to that Tiferet. Suppose somebody just came yesterday. And suppose especially somebody just came yesterday and they've never experienced Israelite before. They're just walking up the street. Some guy's learning in the mirror and he comes in. What does he see? He sees a bunch of adults in a room that's pretty much dark with somebody holding a candle, waving it around, right? And someone else with a funny beard saying, oh, this is how high he's going to be when he marries her. And then they start swaying back and forth and he's like, woo, right? Because he didn't have the Yitzchak and he didn't have the Abram. He just walked into the Yaakov. But those Yaakovs, they're all too few. And it's actually good that they're all too few, because if you lived on the stage of Yaakov, that's not where life is. And we mentioned this last week. So every day I have this Tchiyat HaMetim. I begin my day with an Avram. But I decide to have that Avram. I decide if I'm going to sit on the edge of my bed, modani, and connect, and appreciate, and focus. You can give yourself that spark of energy every single morning. Right? And it's so easy to miss it. And I woke up this morning. My kids went to sleep last night at 12:30 at night. You know, Yair looked so cute yesterday. Picture Yair after 5 hours sleep when he has to get up to go to Kaitana. It's not, right? It's a different world. Right? So I've got this enormous challenge. Because I'm going to wake up Adi and Yair, right? And they have to get up and go to Kaitana. I don't just want them to, I can stick them in the car and say you're going and put them on the bus. I want them to want to go, I want them to have a good morning. So that means you got to get up earlier, and you got to give them the time, and you got to do a nice bagav, which is what we do, whatever, right, on the back, you know, a little tickling just at the right time, right? So you wake up in the morning, and it's just you, and your wife isn't there, and you have your two children, and you could be, oh God, I'm so tired, and I have to get my kids out of bed. If that's how you start your day, that's what your day is going to be. Or you can sit on the edge of your bed, and you can take 60 seconds of modani. And you can do it. And I can't tell you what a valuable habit this is to develop. So let's think about what I'm thankful for today. I'm going to get up and I'm going to go to my two children, 2 out of 4. And they're healthy, Baruch Hashem, today. And they're happy and they're good. And they came to an Israelite experience and they actually enjoyed it. And I'm lucky enough to get to wake them up in the morning. These kids are going to get on that bus smiling because I'm determined that they should soak up that energy from me. If that's how you get up, then that's what happens. And that's what happens. But this is the same recipe, right? This isn't Benny Friedman. This is Torah. Simple. So that's my Avram. But that's like a piece of the day, that Avram. Most of your day is Yitzchak. And Yitzchak is a lot of work. Yitzchak is class, and Yitzchak is exploring, and Yitzchak is struggling, and Yitzchak is the end of a program, and now where do I go with this? Jones question. That's a lot of work. Know that if you put in the Yitzchak, if you accept the Mechaye Metim, that Hashem gives me a new day every day, and that this is today's Yitzchak, if you put in that work, you will get to Yaakov. I don't know when you'll get to Yaakov, but you'll get there. And this is the recipe for life. And that's why the second blessing is so powerful. And I'll give you just one inkling, Matir Asurim. Do you know what an incredible word that is? Matir Asurim. That Hashem, Matir is to loosen the knot, to set free, the Asurim. I think of two things when I think of these two words. First of all, and I would suggest you do this, there are certain Israeli soldiers who have been missing in action since 1982. One of them is a good friend of mine. If you're curious about their story and you're on the tour, remind me, I'll tell you the story. Can't imagine what it is to be a Zach Baumel sitting in captivity probably in Syria since 1982. Can't even imagine what it is to be his parents. Who can imagine that? How could you go a day without appreciating that? So every day when I get to these words, I take a moment to appreciate them. And to ask Hashem, you know, how can you go through a day if you don't appreciate that there's a Jewish soldier? 6 of them missing in action. But on a deeper level, and at a more global level, what does Matir Asurim mean? Hashem has the ability to set me free. There are all sorts of things that keep us prisoner. Right? We're prisoners to our desire, to our processes. You know, it's a very interesting thing. There's a standard rule in psychology. Okay? Everybody has things in their life that are unhealthy. Nobody's perfectly healthy. If you think you're perfectly healthy and doing everything right, you got some work to do. Okay? Everybody has stuff they need to work on. And if you look at the stuff you need to work on, you'll see that most of it fits into patterns. And in those patterns, you do things that you absolutely know are unhealthy. You know they're unhealthy. You know? When I was in the army, okay, in Lebanon, so I started smoking. Smoking is like any other addiction. If you smoke once, you're a smoker forever. You could not smoke a cigarette for 4 or 5 years, I can still taste the cigarette smoke, right? Somebody gave me, if I go back to reserve duty, it happens every time. Very hard not to smoke. So you're in Lebanon, and you're smoking 2 packs a day, which is crazy. And I was only lucky enough to have a girlfriend who basically said to me, and that's the only reason I met this girl, you either throw out the cigarettes or you throw me out, and I made the right choice, right? And not long after that, you know, we were finished, but at least that stuck, right? So why do Israelis start smoking cigarettes? I understand it. Because you look at that little notice, right? The Surgeon General determines this is dangerous for your health, and you're wearing a flak vest, and you've been fired at last night by an M203 grenade launcher. It seems kind of silly. But in your mind, you absolutely know this is a dumb thing to do. It's ridiculous. And then they go on doing it. You know it's unhealthy. You know that you could die from it. So why do you do it? Because there's a payoff. Now, it doesn't matter what the payoff is. Anything you do, I don't know, you eat too much. You snap at your spouse. You consistently get into a relationship and you're almost there, and then you dump him because you're afraid of whatever. There's a payoff. Whatever unhealthy behavior we have, there's a payoff. And that payoff could be, you know, not risking rejection. It could be, you know, fear of happiness, like people who've been molested when they're children. And it could be the simple thing like the enjoyment of the food that you're eating. Right? So if you want to beat that system, what do you have to do? You have to figure out what the payoff is. And that's a lot of hard work. And first you have to figure out what your pattern is, and then you figure out what your payoff is. It's not years of Freudian therapy. And when you figure out what the payoff is, then you have to figure out how to exchange that payoff for a different payoff and make it a cognizant process. And this is how you get rid of the really unhealthy things in your life. Well, you know what that is? That's Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. It's very simple. That's Matir Asurim. Avram is the beginning. When you figure out that you're in an unhealthy process, that is a liberating experience. You never really thought about it before. You just realize, this is just unhealthy. And you don't want to be doing it. And you know you want to be doing it. That's awesome. Don't get depressed by that. Because that's an Avram. That's awesome. But then you got to put in the Yitzchak. Yitzchak is really hard work. You get there and then you lose it. And then you get there and then you lose it. It's a lot of work. And you ask Hashem, Matir Asurim, I know that I'm a prisoner to something. I'm working on releasing myself from it. And I need your help. That's the energy of Yitzchak. And then you get to the third stage, which is Yaakov. Atah Kadosh. V'shimcha Kadosh. And your name is Kadosh. U'kadoshim b'chol yom yaluch ha'selah. And those who are Kadosh will forever praise you. Baruch atah Hashem akel ha'kadosh. What is Kedusha? What is holiness really? Holiness is the ability to bring Hashem into my life. How does an object become holy? This is just a plastic cup, right? It's just a piece of nothing. It's a plastic cup. This is a pen. A pen can't be holy, right? But if you take this pen and you write Torah with it, it's a holy pen. If you hide inside the pen, the grace after meals, ooh, right? It's a holy pen. Like that, yeah? I didn't even realize I had this on, right? Do-do-do-do, right? It's a holy pen, right? It's a miracle, right? Wasn't there this? You never saw this before? Oh, this is the grace after meals. Birkat Hamazon, right? I'm waiting to put Rabbi Aaron's book in one of these. You know? Anyway, send me an email and I'll find out. You can go online. It's called the Bencher Pen. Anyway, right? Anyway, right? Kedusha is all about synthesis. I reach out to Hashem and Hashem comes into my life. Right? Kedusha on a certain level is limiting. Right? Limited. What makes me kadosh are the things that I can't do. Right? Because we're a holy people, we don't do certain things. The temple is kadosh, so you don't go in there if you're impure. And people usually get stuck on the limitations. But limitations are what sets you free. You know? You meet someone and you want to marry them. What does Judaism say? Judaism says, if you want to be married to someone, you have to limit yourself to everybody else in the world. There can only be one person. So you think that's terrible, right? Because God created all people. Wouldn't it be great if we could share love with everybody? Except the problem is if you're sharing love with everybody, you're not really loving anybody. If you're dating 20 different girls, you're not really dating anyone. I remember recently, and we're almost done, I had a fascinating discussion. My wife and I were in America for Shavuot. I ran into a student that I hadn't seen in a while. This is like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. And I'm talking to him, just making conversation. How are you? So, you know, have you found a special someone yet? That's one of the three big rabbis' questions, right? You know, have you found someone? Other people don't do this. They don't say, so how are you married yet? Right? But we do that, right? Cut right to the chase. So I'm talking to him. He says, no, it's funny you ask. He says, I'm actually, tonight I'm going on a date for the second time, and Thursday I'm going on a date for the third time. So this is a reasonably intelligent fellow. He's a lawyer. I thought, okay, this should be logical, right? If you're going on a date tonight for the second time, then Thursday you're going on a date for the third time. And I said, well, yeah, duh. So he says, no, you don't understand. One girl I'm dating the second time, the other girl I'm dating the third time. I said, you gotta be kidding me. He says, no. I said, we do this all the time. This is what you do on the West Side, right? Because someone sets you up with this girl, but then you meet that girl, and someone sets you up with that girl. So what if this girl moves on? And never mind the fact that God decides who you marry, never mind the fact, right? So I said to him, listen, if you're dating this girl and that girl, you're not dating either of them. Figure out which one you want to date and call the other one and be honest. He says, no, 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 you can't do that. You can do both. And then at a certain point, so I said, well, how do you know when you're done with? He says, well, I don't know, 5, 6, sometimes 10 dates. So I said to him, well, what happens if you're dating one girl and the other girl walks into the cafe? He goes, oh, that'll never happen. Right? So I said, so we had a long discussion about this. This is a real serious problem. We do this not just with dating. We do this with all things in life. Right? We grab onto this, but we grab onto that. I've met people, they want to go to yeshiva. But they find different places. So they do a class here and a class there and a class here. That's not studying in yeshiva. Right? That's shopping in a supermarket. Right? If you're going to study, you've got to pick a course. In life and in all things. We do this in our lives, right? I try to do a couple hours of work and a couple hours of parenting and a couple hours of this. And I'm with my child, but I'm also with myself. Oh, no, no, no. You come home at night, it's 6:30 at night. Cell phones off, laptops off. That's time for the children. Because that's who I'm dating right then. Very challenging for us in our compartmentalized society. And it's interesting, as an aside, by the way, this fellow finally decided to take a risk. And I convinced him to date one girl for 3 months. And now he's married, Baruch Hashem. It's not a complicated recipe. What happens? When I start to date one person, because if I'm dating so many people, I'm not dating anybody, I have to limit myself to everybody else. But because I'm willing to limit myself to everybody else, I discover unlimitedness with one person. Unlimitedness comes from being willing to limit yourself. You want to develop a relationship with God? You got to limit all the idols in your life. Because then you can discover unlimitedness. And that's Kedusha. Kedusha is the willingness to limit myself in order to discover unlimitedness. And that's Yaakov. Yaakov synthesizes the burst of energy of Avraham, the hard work of Yitzchak. He sets the path, he creates the paradigm, and he pursues that focused agenda to discover an unlimitedness in the world of limitations. And those are the three processes of life. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Chesed, Gvura, and Tiferet, which is Kedusha. And if you can focus on those three things, when you say the Shemoneh Esrei, you will have a different experience. Pardon? The first is Chesed, loving kindness, outward energy, burst, spark. The second is Gvura, internal energy, receiving, hard work, process. And the third is Kedusha, sanctity, which is based on Tiferet, the synthesis of both of those. The burst of energy of destruction, of creation, birth. Okay? So I wish that we had hours to pursue the Shemoneh Esrei. If for one person in this room, the way you pursue the Shemoneh Esrei changes a little bit, that will have made this worthwhile. I hope that this won't be the end of a learning experience together. I hope that this will be a continuity. And I ran a little bit over time, but I wanted to make sure we finished this idea. Thank you.
This presentation by Rabbi Benny Friedman has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.